welcome to the evening show on U Radio, our daily live show broadcasting from Monday to Friday, and which actually today marks the beginning of its second season. So as always, thank you for tuning in, whether you're a regular listener or completely new to the program. As our regular listeners will maybe notice, since our last time on there, the concept of the evening show has evolved quite a lot, because for now we've become a fully bilingual French and English program, and it's also going to be more news and more of our European playlist to reflect the whole political, cultural and artistic diversity of our continent. And of course, we will still sometimes be having guests on our show. We'll be sharing their research, initiatives and projects with you, so I hope you'll stay tuned. Also, you're going to hear some new voice on the program, as we have had a new addition to our The Evening Show team. So I hope you please welcome Marius Ronedet, who's going to be with us at the beginning and the middle of the show to bring you all the top European news of the day. Now to today's program, we're delighted to be joined by Zoé Larose, who works at the Agronaut, an urban farm situated in the midst of the Île de Nantes. So you might have guessed it, Zoé is going to tell us all about the subject of urban agriculture, which is so often branded as the solution for shorter food circuits and a more circular economy in cities. So I hope you stay tuned for all of this. For now, let's start the show with Urban Focus, our daily news segment, bringing you the top stories from all around the continent, and that will be presented to you in French by Marius. Bonsoir, Marius.
Bonsoir, Morgane. Bonsoir à tous.
Euradio, le journal, Marius Ronodet.
À la une de l'actualité, en ce mardi 11 janvier, plus de la moitié des Européens potentiellement infectés par le variant Omicron du Covid-19 d'ici deux mois, selon l'OMS. L'UE en deuil après la mort cette nuit du président du Parlement européen, l'Italien David Sassoli, et l'appel de Kiev pour l'organisation d'un sommet quadripartite avec Moscou, Paris et Berlin pour mettre un terme au conflit avec les séparatistes pro-russes. Un raz-de-marée à prévoir dans les 6 à 8 prochaines semaines face au variant Omicron. C'est ce qu'a prédit ce matin Hans Kluge, le directeur européen de l'Organisation mondiale de la santé, dans une conférence de presse dédiée à la progression du coronavirus en Europe. Plus de 50% des Européens pourraient être infectés par Omicron d'ici le mois de mars. Une projection qui se base sur le travail de l'Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, basé à Seattle, aux États-Unis. Pour rappel, rien que sur la première semaine de janvier, 7 millions de nouveaux cas de Covid-19 ont été détectés sur le continent. Et un nouveau variant pointe déjà le bout de son nez, le Deltacron. Un virologue chypriote dit avoir découvert cette nouvelle mutation du SARS-CoV-2 en fin de semaine dernière. Il s'agirait d'un alliage entre le variant Delta et Omicron. David Sassoli est mort cette nuit, on vous annonçait hier soir sur nos ondes, son état de santé est très dégradé. Le président du Parlement européen était hospitalisé depuis une quinzaine de jours dans son pays, en Italie. Un décès qui n'est pas lié à la pandémie de coronavirus, mais à un large dysfonctionnement de son système immunitaire. Ex-présentateur du JT de 20h de la RAI, la télévision publique italienne, le sociodémocrate de 65 ans a marqué les esprits des Italiens puis des Européens. À la tête du Parlement européen depuis juillet 2019, il avait succédé à son compatriote Antonio Tajani. Dans la journée, les hommages se sont multipliés. Ursula von der Leyen, la présidente de la Commission européenne, a salué un journaliste plein de tact, un excellent président du Parlement européen et avant tout un bon ami. L'eurodéputé maltaise Roberta Metsola, pressentie pour lui succéder depuis plusieurs mois, s'est dit elle très attristé. L'Europe a perdu un leader, j'ai perdu un ami, la démocratie a perdu un champion. Fin de citation. Et puis, cette surprise dans le secteur des transports. Alors que la crise sanitaire bouscule les modes de déplacement avec un transport aérien en grande difficulté, la solution maritime est presque victime de son succès en ce début d'année 2022. Elle est aujourd'hui désorganisée par des dysfonctionnements liés à une demande très forte et par une logistique dépendante des confinements en vigueur selon les régions ou les pays. On écoute Paul Touret, directeur de l'Institut supérieur d'économie maritime situé à Saint-Nazaire. Il revient sur l'activité des armateurs en ce début du mois de janvier.
Ça va extrêmement bien pour eux. On raconte que leur bénéfice de cette année est équivalent à ceux des 10 dernières années. C'est simple, en fait. D'abord, vous avez une surdemande. Donc, quand vous avez une demande qui est plus forte que l'offre, c'est à peu près normal que les prix augmentent. Mais aussi, on est sur un marché, ce qu'on appelle le marché spot, si vous voulez, le marché au quotidien. Et dans ce marché-là, les chargeurs entretiennent des prix très hauts. C'est-à-dire que ceux qui veulent transporter des marchandises veulent absolument que les marchandises partent. Et donc, ils acceptent aussi ces prix-là. Il n'y a personne qui veut laisser ses conteneurs, qui ne veut pas finalement cette rapidité. Et pourquoi ? C'est simple, on a peur, d'une manière générale, des confinements. Ça peut être le confinement du port chinois, ça peut être le confinement de l'usine chinoise, ça peut être le confinement du centre commercial européen. Vous voyez, les Pays-Bas, par exemple, ont mis en place un confinement. Donc chacun a peur, en fait, que la porte se referme derrière lui ou devant lui. Tout ça entretient, si vous voulez, un espèce de court terme. Tout le monde veut de l'anxiété et d'urgence qui fait que ça entretient vers le haut.
Paul Touret, directeur de l'Institut supérieur d'économie maritime Nantes-Saint-Nazaire, au micro de Cécile Doguet. Le président ukrainien réclame ce mardi un sommet à 4 avec le Kremlin, l'Élysée et la chancellerie allemande. Son ambition, mettre fin au conflit qui oppose son pays aux séparatistes pro-russes stationnés dans l'est de l'Ukraine et qui sont soutenus par la Russie. Un appel qui intervient dans un contexte de négociations diplomatiques accrues cette semaine sur le dossier ukrainien. Hier, entre la Russie et les États-Unis à Genève, sans aucun représentant européen. Et demain et jeudi, à Bruxelles et à Vienne. Pour plus d'informations sur le format de réunion Normandie voulu par Volodymyr Zelensky, rendez-vous sur euradio.fr pour découvrir les explications de Francisca Pechel. La Grèce, quant à elle, a de quoi se réjouir. Le ministère grec de la Culture vient d'obtenir de son équivalent italien le prêt pour 8 ans d'un fragment de la frise décorative du Parthénon. Cet objet archéologique était jusqu'ici exposé au musée Antonino Salinas à Palerme, en Sicile. Un prêt qui intervient en plein conflit perpétuel avec la Grande-Bretagne et la Grèce au sujet de l'éventuelle restitution des plus beaux marbres détenus par le British Museum. Mais l'institution londonienne est loin d'être la seule à disposer d'éléments décoratifs du Parthénon. Non, le monument phare de l'Acropole. Le musée du Louvre dispose par exemple de plusieurs éléments. Alors, est-il vraiment nécessaire de rassembler l'ensemble des éléments de la frise comme la Grèce le voudrait dans un seul musée ? L'archéologue François Querelle de l'École pratique des hautes études nous donne son point de vue.
Le retour d'un certain nombre de fragments qui sont moulés, donc ce n'est pas la même impression. De rajouter le pied, vous voyez, d'Artémis sur un fronton ou sur la frise continue, le visiteur ne va pas y faire tellement attention. En revanche, quand vous avez sur une frise 160 mètres de long, qui est la longueur de la frise continue, la majorité des plaques qui est sous forme de moulage, cela frappe les yeux. Donc du point de vue de la vision, c'est évidemment préférable de réunir au même endroit l'ensemble des fragments connus, mais du point de vue de la diffusion, disons, de la connaissance du monument, on peut parfaitement concevoir que des fragments moins importants restent dans les musées.
François Querelle, archéologue spécialisé dans l'étude du Parthénon.
Radio. La météo.
Côté ciel, les nuages domineront demain un peu partout en Europe. Le soleil sera très présent malgré tout chez nos amis slovènes. Des averses sont également à prévoir à Athènes en milieu de journée et quelques flocons à Moscou. Au niveau des températures, il fera moins 3 demain matin à Berlin et 1 degré dans l'après-midi. À Moscou, moins 15 dans la matinée comme dans la seconde partie de la journée. À Lyon, dans votre métropole radio, moins 1 le matin et 2 degrés dans l'après-midi.
Merci beaucoup Marius pour ce tour d'horizon des actualités et du ciel européen bien sûr. Et on vous retrouvera à 18h30 pour le Flash Info du jour. Nous allons désormais entamer notre première pause musicale après laquelle nous retrouverons Zoé Larose, animatrice d'atelier jardin au sein de la ferme urbaine de l'Agronaute à Nantes pour nous parler de l'agriculture urbaine justement. En attendant, voici Voitan de Prisa par le groupe espagnol Aero. Back. You've just been listening to Voitan de Prisa, I'm Going So Fast in Spanish, by the Bilbao-based band Aero. And it's now time for the first part of the conversation with our guest of the day, Zoé Larose. So, Zoé, welcome to the evening show.
Thanks.
And Zoé is representing the urban farm of the Agronaute here in Nantes, where she works as one of the garden workshop leaders. And she's here with us today to discuss all about the stakes of urban agriculture. So, Zoé, let's perhaps start this interview with defining this central term, urban agriculture, because there's a lot of terms associated with this concept. For instance, I've come across roof gardens, peri-urban farms, micro-farms, community gardens, to only quote a few. So what exactly is urban farming?
In Nantes, we have this term, which is edible city. And it's the fact that a city has been separated from countryside in so long, and now it's time to bring back nature into the city. So we want to put fruits and vegetables everywhere in the city with gardens all around, and our philosophy is also to do it with and for people, so not only for farmers. And it's really putting back nature and plants everywhere in the city.
Mm-hmm. And so now agriculture is developing everywhere across France and also the whole continent. So, for example, I've read about farms in capitals such as Ljubljana, Berlin, Paris, but also in smaller cities and towns, which our best example is of course Nantes with the Agronaute, which you represent. So what explains this upwards trend towards more urban agriculture in cities, in your opinion?
I think there's the ecological context, which means that we have less and less food and the supplies are shortened. And we also have a need for nature everywhere mm-hmm. around. It was increased with the lockdowns and COVID-19. And I think now it's the time to put people, their hands back to the grass and to the nature. And that's the main goal of urban agriculture. It's not only to produce food, but it's also to sensitize people, children, everyone to growing plants, and also by this way reconnecting to their agriculture mm-hmm. to be more local and organic and everything.
Mm-hmm. And also, I guess, to get people to know where their food actually comes from, because when you read studies about kids thinking that like pasta grows on trees, that's just simply not possible. And so you've a bit anticipated my next question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So what are the objectives and advantages of urban farming, Zoe?
I think most people would think that it's producing, and indeed we have gardens where there is a productive way. So we have the figures are for one person, one family, it would be 100 square meters to produce food for everyday life. Mm-hmm. So if everyone in the cities had 100 square meters and knew how to produce it effectively, we would grow our own food. But in the cities, it's not possible. So it's mainly a way to sensitize people and to learn more about plants and how to grow it, because it's a job. It doesn't come just like that. So it's not, I don't think the main goal is producing, because with farms on every rooftop, we would not still feed the city.
Mm-hmm, exactly, because I've actually come across an article about a European Parliamentary Research Service, which said that around 1-5% of global food production today might stem from urban agriculture. So, as you said, it's a respectable contribution, but it's still too little to feed the cities. And so, I just wanted to ask what you think about this fact, if we can like have enough food produced in cities, like more at least food produced in cities through urban agriculture.
I think it's not only to produce food, but also to bring back the biodiversity mm-hmm. With for the bees and the butterflies and every insect, really. So the gardens also have this use that we often forget, mm-hmm, because bees are the essential animal for our food. And I think the main goal would be green belts around the city, and it's been experimented in France. So there is, for instance, Angers is could be fed from the green belts of farmers all around the city, and that's urban agriculture would be a plus. But this would be a solution for the, if we really wanted to produce food for the cities and the inhabitants.
Mm-hmm. And so it's less about the aspect of food security, like getting more food into the cities, and more, as you said, about sensitizing people to where your food comes from, how it's grown, etc., etc. And that's just so great. And so now moving on to what I found a really interesting concept, which is the one of sustainable development. So that's very often quoted nowadays, and it rests on three pillars, which are environment, social, so society, and the economy. And so I just wanted to ask you, in how far urban agriculture responds to all those three aspects, because that's what it's often presented as. So how does it help the environment, society, and economy as well?
I can find it in my own experience. Mm-hmm. I am a community workshop leader, and I work in community gardens. And the main goal is to produce food for the families, but it's also to do it with them, so that more and more they have the knowledge and the abilities to do it by themselves. And of course, there's also always an economical factor, which is often forgotten. So today, the main policy that is to have is to give more money to these associations and urban farms that are grow all around. And it's really a major aspect of the job also.
Mm-hmm. And now there's also some voices that do question the environmental benefits of urban farming. For example, they point to the fact that transport, so the urban agriculture is about shorter circuits, and they say that the fact that transport is less only accounts for just a small part of the production, and so that actually maybe urban agriculture isn't that beneficial from an environmental point of view. So what do you think about that point?
About the fact that they
say it's not environmental friendly. Actually, they say it's producing more, say, CO2 emissions because we have to use expensive technology, which is like using a lot more water, etc., etc. So what do you respond to those people?
I think that there are parts of the urban agriculture that are not eco-friendly, actually, mm-hmm. because we, for instance, there are greenhouses that are in the dark and there are only electrical lighting, and that's obviously a nonsense. But if you really want to grow food in open air and with no pesticides, and you only do it in a eco-friendly way, it is possible and it's been proven to be. So it's really not forgetting that we do it with natural ways and following nature ways.
Mm-hmm. Really. And so I guess, as always, it's a case by case case. Yeah, that's exactly right. And so now, Azuri, I wanted to ask you, what are, in your opinion, the biggest challenges that urban agriculture is facing for developing even more nowadays? Like, how can we make it even bigger?
I think it's we have to maybe also give people more time to spend in the gardens and in nature in the cities. And then we have to sensitize more and more people. We go to schools every week and we have to touch every generation, because people are often in their works and only thinking about cities. And in Paris especially, it's really like you take the subway, you go to work, you go home. Mm-hmm. And I think taking time and giving time to people to just wander around in nature in the city can really reconnect them with themselves and also to nature.
Mm-hmm. And so a last question before we go to our next musical break and to conclude this section on a maybe more European angle, as we love to do on Euradio. Zoe, when preparing this interview, notably told me about a festival of urban farming that's taking place across borders. So here in Europe, with, for example, cities participating in France, but also in Spain, Switzerland and Belgium. And so could you maybe tell us a bit more about this really interesting initiative, please?
It's a festival called the 48 Hours of Urban Agriculture, and it takes place in the spring, which is the best season for plants, so it's in May. And it's been created by the SAGE, the Association La Sauge in French, and now it's in 23 cities, and every city organizes itself with the local partners and associations, structures that work in urban agriculture. And the main goal is to, in a weekend, talk about this and gather people around together to talk about this, whether they are completely new to the subject or professionals, and every age. It takes different form and it's really, really interesting.
Well, I can only say save the date for that, for the 48 hours of urban agriculture. Thank you so much, Zoe, for this first set of insights into the stakes surrounding the subject of urban agriculture. We're going to have you back in around 10 minutes to get into a bit more of detail about the urban farm that you represent, so which is the AgroNord here in Nantes, which is operated, as you said, by the Association La Sauge. In the meantime, we're going to take another short musical break and listen to Conversations by That Chic, a young Portuguese artist with some very interesting disco funk influences. So I hope you enjoy that.
Conversations with the beat, it's gonna be amazing. Conversations with myself, I must have gone crazy. Conversations, they're so deep, can't fake it. Come on down, I wanna make it. I wanna make it smooth. I wanna make it. I'm gonna make it true. I'm gonna make it. I wanna make it smooth. I wanna make it. I'm gonna make it true. I'm gonna make it. I'm gonna make it.
Voilà, cette fois-ci en français pour la suite de notre émission The Evening Show ici sur Euradio. Vous venez juste d'écouter Zale Mayele par Kokoko, un morceau en lingala, la langue indigène prédominante de la République démocratique du Congo dont le groupe est originaire. À suivre dans l'émission, nous allons à nouveau nous tourner vers Zoé Larose, animatrice jardin au sein de la ferme urbaine de l'Agronaute, qui nous décrira plus en détail le travail de cette structure nantaise et aussi de l'association La Sauge qui l'opère. Le tout bien sûr accompagné de morceaux issus de notre playlist paritaire et européenne, mais tout de suite, on se tourne vers Marius pour son flash info de 18h30.
Euradio, le flash. Marius Renaudet.
moins 50% des Européens pourraient être infectés par Omicron d'ici la mi-mars, selon l'OMS. La branche européenne de l'Organisation mondiale de la santé prévoit un raz-de-marée de contamination de coronavirus sur le continent à cause du variant. L'Europe a enregistré plus de 7 millions de nouveaux cas de Covid-19 au cours de la première semaine de janvier. Et déjà, un virologue chypriote estime avoir découvert un nouveau variant, le Deltacron, en fin de semaine dernière. Il s'agirait de la fusion de Delta et d'Omicron. Le drapeau français projeté à Bruxelles hier soir et pas de mobilisation de la classe politique belge. Les arcades du cinquantenaire situées en plein cœur du quartier européen ont été illuminées de bleu, de blanc et de rouge alors que la présidence française du Conseil de l'UE a débuté le 1er janvier dernier, bien loin du tollé qu'a suscité l'installation du drapeau européen sous l'Arc de Triomphe le 31 décembre. La PFUE qui nous amène à Brest où une grève est prévue entre demain et vendredi à l'aéroport. Alors que 54 ministres européens doivent se réunir dans la ville pour deux sommets informels, les contrôleurs aériens et les ingénieurs de maintenance ont lancé un préavis de grève hier contre le manque d'effectifs. Les agents de l'aéroport de Brest-Bretagne se disent incapables d'assurer les missions de service public dont ils sont responsables. Avec si peu de moyens humains, aucun vol ministériel ne devrait toutefois être perturbé par cette mobilisation. Boris Johnson, de nouveau épinglé pour de potentielles fêtes en plein confinement. Le Premier ministre britannique a dû s'expliquer en urgence ce mardi devant les parlementaires. Au cœur de l'échange, l'organisation d'une réception dans les jardins de sa résidence au 10 Downing Street en mai 2020, alors que les citoyens lambda étaient confinés chez eux. Une nouvelle révélation embarrassante pour le cabinet ministériel du Royaume-Uni. 5 réceptions similaires font d'ailleurs actuellement l'objet d'une enquête. La Grèce progresse sur le dossier du retour des marbres du Parthénon sur son sol national. Le ministère de la Culture grecque vient d'annoncer hier le prêt au musée de l'Acropole pour au moins 8 ans d'un fragment de la frise des Panathénées. Elle ornait sous l'Antiquité le Parthénon à Athènes. Jusqu'ici, cette pièce était exposée dans un musée de Palerme en Sicile.
Merci beaucoup Marius pour ce Flash Info. On va désormais faire une petite pause musicale avant de retrouver notre invité du jour, Zoé Larose, de la ferme urbaine de l'Agronaute à Nantes. Voici donc Eternity, Éternité, un titre entraînant, et porté par la voix de l'artiste franco-caribéenne Adeline. So you're so roaming free, never easy to please, running around like the world was mine.
We sail the way. turn me on, you do it perfectly. Taking it personally, it gotta hurt, you see. So why you flourishing? I'll be encouraging. Now what occurred to me ain't about currency.
We are the line, but what you do is refine. My only question is why. The answer is violence. I can prove that you're mine. I cannot play your silence, but you know what the fuck going on. And I know that the love will be strong. Or you be talking a lot. I know you're bugging, I've seen it coming.
Don't bottle it up, you should be bottle popping currently. Either way around, I'm sticking with you.
Still listening to the evening show. This was Eternity by Adeline on U-Radio. It's now 6:37 p.m. and we're still in the studio with our guest of the day, Zoé Larose, from the urban farm of the Agronaut here in North, who's now going to tell us a bit more about the Agronaut itself and the association that runs the site. So, Zoé, could you please start by presenting La Sauge, the association you work for, to us, and just for the anecdote before you start off, because I really appreciated the pun and creative acronym. So La Sauge stands for Société d'Agriculture Urbaine Généreuse et Engagée, I hope I got that right, which means Generous and Engaged Urban Agriculture Society, and of course also designates the herb sage, which I guess you might grow in your farm, so we're going to find out about that in a second. And so, yeah, please tell us about La Sauge, Zoé.
So the SAGE is an association that was created in 2015, and the main goal is that everyone could garden 2 hours every week. So we hope to pursue that goal with all the other associations in everywhere in urban agriculture with multiple ways. Yes, so that's the main goal of the association.
Getting everyone to put their hands into some earth and grass, as you said, 2 hours a week. So how do you achieve that? Because as you said before in the first part, a lot of people don't have time. So how do you attract them to get to do that?
Well, we have three main ways. So we have the first one, which is to produce plants in the urban farm and in different urban farms, because we also have a site in Paris, around Paris. So we have 2 other farms, urban farms there. And we grow plants that are easy to produce and cultivate for people so that they can garden at home and in their own gardens. We also produce microgreens, which are sold to the restaurants that they can put on their food and plates. Mm-hmm. So that's the producing way, and it helps people to grow themselves their own plants. We also have a social way, which is that we go to schools, we welcome also people on the farms, so team buildings, and also people from all age and structure, and we make them discover this way of cultivating plants, and also we do garden workshops so they can learn to do they can grow plants, they can discover the seeds, they can grow microgreens also at home. So we have all those garden workshops. And the third way is that we welcome people who are not interested in plants at first, and we use events such as musical events, wine markets or wine salons, beer salons, and we also had for instance a Christmas market where we welcomed a lot of people who do their own arts, and everyone could buy Christmas gifts, but in this way they also discover the farm all around them.
Mm-hmm, that definitely sounds all so, so great. And so very concretely now, Zoe, we've been talking a lot about urban farming and food production, and also it's kind of dinner time now. So what do you actually grow at the Agronaut here in Nantes? What plants do you have? You said you have microplants, right? But what veg, for example, could I produce there?
Well, we produce the, all kinds of vegetables according mm-hmm. to the season. So we grow tomatoes, peppers, zucchinis, all kind of plants that you can find in the seasons. We also have fruits like raspberries, strawberries, every berry that you had. and we also have edible flowers, which are really interesting, especially in the educational side. And finally, we have aromatic plants, which can be used as a medicine also. We have workshops about that. So sage, thyme, mint, basil, everything.
Mm-hmm. And so you don't only produce, but as I said, urban farming is often about short food circuits, because you also sell your harvest in those cycles and local shops, am I right?
We sell our plants, and for the food that we produce, we eat it in the sites with the volunteers and the team. But we can't sell the vegetables that we grow, because we don't have that much space, so mm-hmm. it wouldn't be really interesting. And also, it's all kinds of rules that mm-hmm. we can't follow right now.
Yeah, difficult rules, regulations, I see. And so I've also seen that every first day, notably, you open your doors to the public who can volunteer to spend a whole day or half a day only gardening at your urban farm. As you said, the objective is to get everyone to do 2 hours a week. So how does that work? How do those open days work?
Well, in Lagronot, it's a greenhouse, which mm-hmm. is 3,500 meters, square meters. So it's really a huge place. And we have a part of it, which is a urban farm. And it's really educational. So we have all kinds of tanks with plants. And people, all the educational gardens are only grown by volunteers. So everyone can take care of this side of the urban farm, and it can be repairing some of the tanks, or it can be putting more new seeds for the next season. So it's really multiple as the actions that we propose to the volunteers. And it also brings people together, because mm-hmm. we welcome refugees in the volunteers. We also welcome everyone who sometimes has an objective to work in mm-hmm. the urban farming work mm-hmm. in general. So it's really multiple people that come together in a main goal to take care of this site, which is really interesting to the public and the city.
Mm-hmm. And what feedback do you generally receive from those volunteers?
We had great feedbacks just after the lockdowns. We couldn't handle the reservations for the volunteers' mm-hmm. Time, because there were so much. People were really longing to go back to taking care of plants and reconnecting to that. And usually the feedbacks are really positive, because we are a young team, and we have we all discover also what it is to grow plants. And I think it creates a real nice way to do it together, and it's really festive, I would say.
Mm-hmm. And so in the first part of our conversation, we talked about the fact that urban farms serve not only an environmental but also a great social purpose, and you've already come to talk a bit about the fact that the Agronaut supports various projects in that regard. But could you maybe go into a bit more detail about that?
Yeah, we also have a solidarity side mm-hmm. in the project. We had an employee that was in a kind of inclusion contract. Mm-hmm. So he used to be there are homeless people that can be brought back to work in special contracts, and we had that. It was really interesting. Our goal is also to be a really bigger site of work for people who were homeless and will have to go back to work. So it's really a main goal in the years to come. And we also, in the garden, community gardens that we work in, we bring people together and we create social link with people who can be sometimes really old and isolated, mm-hmm. and with also the intergenerational side, which is really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm. This inclusivity sounds really, really great. And so now, as we ask on the evening show, we also always try to get our guest, like the guest, the person behind the guest, to know a bit. Could you maybe tell us a bit more about your personal path and experience? Like, why did you decide to work at the Agronaut, for example?
I had discovered the ecological impact of our way of life, and I wanted to find alternatives. And I think when you go back to the roots of our way of life, you really find that growing plants before and feeding them ourselves, before everything, it's really to produce our food as we used to do lots of time ago. Mm-hmm. And I think I really wanted to find this again and learn about this, because I don't have the typical farmer path. So.
Mm-hmm. And so exactly, because there might be listeners out there who are now thinking, oh, I really want to do the job she's doing too. So how does one become a gardening workshop leader in an urban farm like yourself, if you say that you don't have a farming background? How did that work out?
I think it's really multiple, actually, because we organize events and we have people in our team that work in events and who still discover the farming side, mm-hmm. who work in a urban farm. We have people who do communication and work in a urban farm. I have a path which was more with children, who mm-hmm. I learned to not educate, but, you know, do workshops mm-hmm. with them. And that's how I ended up to do workshops in gardens. So it's really about your personality and what you want to do. But you can work in urban farming in so many ways now. I think in France, there are a lot of formations that are short in 1 year, and where you can learn everything you want. So really get closer to the structures around you that do urban farming, and they will be available, I think, to advise you.
Mm-hmm. I think that was some nice concluding words. Thank you, Zuri, so much for having been with us here today to discuss the topic of urban farming in the city. And I think it was a fascinating conversation. But as I said, I'm afraid time always runs out so quickly, and that's all we have time for. So that was Zuri Larose, who's working as a workshop leader at the Agronaut, an urban farm implanted in the very heart of the Ile-de-Nord. Thank you again so much.
Thank you.
We're going to now enter the relatively musical last part of our show with a selection of songs and tracks coming straight from our U-Radio playlist. So here's Language is Notion by London-based electronic artist Bishi. Beyond making music, Bishi is also engaged in increasing the visibility of women at the intersection of music and creative technology. So, for example, the electro scene she herself works in. This is her song Language is Notion. I hope you enjoy.
Mother tongue dissolves in eternity.
Languages and Ocean live on your radio, and without further ado, we're directly going to give you another track. So let's listen to a song that expresses a feeling we probably all sometimes know very too well, and it's called La Flemme by the French duo Bonbon Voodoo.
Une petite frite, accompagnée d'une bonne boisson sucrée. s'abandonner. Ne courez pas, écoutez-moi. Courir, ne courez pas, ne courez pas. Ne courez pas,
courir, c'est s'abandonner. Ne courez pas, écoutez-moi. Courir, c'est s'abandonner. Ne courez pas,
écoutez-moi. Courir, courir, c'est s'abandonner. Ne courez pas, ne courez pas.
Courir, c'est s'abandonner.
We're back on the evening show. You've just been listening to Bonbon Voodoo's song La Flemme, a unique word that belongs to this beautiful category of untranslatable words. So roughly it equates to this certain feeling of laziness and lack of motivation when we simply don't feel up to certain things. And actually, if you enjoyed that song, I can just highly recommend to all of our regional Pays de la Loire listeners to take advantage of the possibility to hear Bonbon Voodoo live in concert, because indeed the duo is going to perform live in Pornichet this Friday at 8:30. And so wouldn't that also be a perfect occasion for a little trip to the sea? That was just me thinking aloud and drifting off here, because looking at the clock, it's actually already almost 7 p.m. and I'm afraid this already marks the end of our show. Thank you for listening to the evening show, and don't forget to tune in tomorrow at the same time on your radio. In the meantime, you can also find podcast versions of this show on our website at uradio.fr or on Spotify and SoundCloud. Thanks again to our special guest of the day, Zoé Larose from the Agrenaut, an urban farm here in Nantes, as well to our special correspondent of the day, Marius Renaudet, for the news report, and of course to our tech director, Eddy Boutin. We're going to leave you with one last song after we sign off. It's called Mi Van, What in Hungarian, by the group Kebab. So that's all from us for now, but we'll be back with you tomorrow. Have a lovely evening.
Úgyis a szívem lassan nehezebb, mint a lexikonát, azt hiszem, barátok. Estira is semmi gond, néha én is elveszítem a kontrollt. Egy nap megtalálom, csak ne fogyjak ki a napokból. Ez nem az élet körforgása, simán minden változatlan. Épp eleget várakoztam, megállokba átkozódva. Hazafelé ványszorogva indulok, háborúba vonulok. Hát átlagosnak vehető, ha rám taposnak az érzéseim. Ingatagok, mint az évszakok váltakoznak. Megbüntettek a rendőrök, este szóval vár a post. És gyűlölöm, hogy bánatos, hogy nem tudok rátartni. Ma bort összel a fájdalomra, másnap meg már advilt. Én is iszom, de ezt lassan abba kéne hagyni, mert nem higítja a stresszt, a szesz és nem segít haladni. És én is egy repuább leszek, percről percre, mint az ott felejtett csokapik a tálangyos tejben. Itt forgok egy helyben, de mi van, hogyha ma mondom el neked, mi van a fejembe?
Mi van, hogyha ma?
A százas puzzle. Nem is nagyon vágom, épp a fázol. A lábam alól kezd kicsúszni a taj. Te lebegek, szóval nincs para. A hírem terjed akár a blászak. Száraz ruhákkal áztam el. 12 az átlag, annyi tudsz a zene szól. Hát ja, várcsak, mi van, hogyha ma? Hey, várcsak, mi van, hogyha ma robbanok be? Ó, oh, várcsak, azt kérdezik, mi van, nem tudom, mondom. Ez van, mindig a holnapot várjuk. De már hiányzik a tegnap. Voltak elsuhannak mellettünk, mint BMW-k a sztrádán. De